With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy. Just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
On April 28, 1988, Aloha Airlines Flight 243 took off from Hawaii's Hilo International Airport. The flight was traveling to Honolulu, less than an hour away. The weather was glorious and conditions were optimal, but just a few minutes after takeoff, a massive boom suddenly jolted the entire plane. Without any warning, the roof covering the first-class cabin was explosively ripped away. Passengers and flight crew panicked. Would they be sucked out into the big blue sky? Would they be able to make an emergency landing? Would the rest of the plane break apart at any minute? If you want to find out what happened, stay tuned as we take off into this terrifying story and many more like it.
You're listening to Be Amazed.
Aboard Flight 243 on that fateful day were 89 passengers and 6 crew members, including Captain Robert Schornsteimer and First Officer Madeline Tompkins. Together, they had more than 10,000 hours of flight experience with this aircraft model, the Boeing 737. The plane was 19 years old, about 10 years from the end of its expected lifespan, and earlier that day it had made 3 round-trip flights from Honolulu to Hilo, Maui, and Kauai. Nothing unusual was noted in the pre-departure inspection, and the plane had recently passed a Boeing service bulletin and an airworthiness directive by 2 separate inspectors. On paper, the aircraft was in top condition and ready to go. However, as one passenger was getting on, she looked out over the boarding bridge and noticed a crack in the aircraft's fuselage about halfway between the aircraft door and the bridge hood. She assumed the staff must have known about it and so said nothing to any ground crew or personnel. After all pre-flight checks were cleared, the plane took off without incident. The aircraft began its ascent, climbing up further and further with passengers still being shown the seatbelt on signs. As the pilots started leveling off the plane at around 24,000 feet, that's when they heard a boom. A huge, cacophonous eruption followed by the rushing sound of wind. First Officer Tompkins' head was flung back and she saw pieces of debris like insulation foam floating around in the cockpit. It was then the pilots looked back and noticed the entry door to the cockpit was missing. But where the first-class ceiling should have been, all they could see now was blue sky. Out in first class, passengers were clinging to their seats, utterly terrified. They'd witnessed a small section of the left-hand side of the plane suddenly rupture, which had led to explosive decompression of the cabin and 300 miles per hour winds ripping off the roof. Now, aircraft have cabin air systems that control pressurization, airflow, and temperature. The higher up in the atmosphere a plane flies, the less oxygen there is and the colder it gets, so these systems are critical to ensure passengers don't suffocate or freeze on their flight. When explosive decompression happens, though, these systems stop working, which is why on passenger planes, oxygen masks drop from the ceiling. However, on Flight 243, an 18-foot section of the roof and sides of the plane had been torn from above the passengers' heads along with their oxygen masks. They were, thankfully, still strapped into their seats, but the cabin crew that had been standing there had to cling on to anything they could to prevent being swept off their feet. But one, tragically, didn't make it in time. Number one attendant, Clarabelle Lansing, was immediately swept out of the hole that appeared in the left side of the aircraft. Number two attendant, Michelle Honda, was thrown to the ground, but managed to crawl up and down the aisle to check on the passengers and try and keep them calm. With the cockpit still mostly intact, the pilots donned their own oxygen masks. They realized quickly that all of their controls felt loose, the plane was rolling left and right, threatening to drop out of the sky any second. Tompkins tuned their transponder to an emergency code to notify Honolulu that they needed to make an emergency landing in nearby Maui, but the noise in the cockpit was so loud, none of her transmissions could be heard. The pilots couldn't communicate with the flight attendants or even hear one another, and so, resorting to hand signals, they began an emergency descent. Wasting no time, they dropped fast, at one point plummeting down at more than 4,100 feet per minute. The ideal rate of descent in passenger jets traveling above 10,000 feet is around 3,000 feet per minute to prevent a steep or uncontrollable drop. But considering Flight 243's already uncontrollable situation, they just needed to get on the ground as fast as possible. Eventually, as they dropped below 14,000 feet, Tompkins was able to reach Maui's emergency channel and requested an emergency landing, along with medical equipment for what she assumed would be a lot of casualties and fatalities. Maui began preparations at Kahului Airport as the passengers in first class began to suffocate from the lack of oxygen. When they made it below 10,000 feet, Captain Shornsteimer slowed the aircraft down in accordance with air traffic control speed limitations. At this height, they could at least breathe and began to gradually turn the plane towards the runway. As he slowed down to 170 knots, about 195 miles per hour, he noticed the plane became less responsive. To land, he needed to be going at 130 knots, around 50 miles per hour slower. But he had no choice. It was either slow down and lose control of the plane in the air, or make it to the runway and risk crashing in a super speedy landing. A breakneck 170 knots it was. He ordered Tompkins to lower the landing gear. The main gear light flashed green, but one extension light wasn't green. The nose gear wasn't down. They manually overrode the computer to drop it, but the light refused to illuminate. They tried it one more time and pulled the override handle down, but the light still wasn't on. Usually, they'd be able to check if it was down through a viewer, but it was blocked, and instead of wasting time trying to clear it, the captain insisted on landing the plane immediately. If he was wrong and the front landing gear wasn't actually down, they were going to hit the tarmac at almost 200 miles per hour without anything to stabilize the front of the plane. It'd be a guaranteed crash. They had no choice but to pray. Thankfully, those landing gear indicator lights turned out to be malfunctioning. The nose gear was indeed down, and 13 minutes after the explosive decompression, Shornsteimer and Tompkins hit the runway and successfully landed. What greeted the emergency services at Kahului Airport made everyone's jaws drop. The plane had been ripped open like a can of sardines. Of the 89 passengers and crew, 65 of them were injured, 8 seriously, and 1, Claribel Lansing, fatally. The plane was damaged beyond repair. Now, last I checked, passenger jets like this aren't meant to turn into convertibles. So, what on earth happened here? Well, typically, the fuselage skin of a plane is around 2.5 millimeters thick, so about the same thickness as 2 credit cards. It's made up of sheet metal, which, on the Boeing 737s, were made in panels about 4 meters long and 2 meters wide. To attach them together, holes are drilled into the edges, and they're joined by a series of rivets. Obviously, the skin is weaker at these overlapped joints, which is where investigators began to suspect the original hole had appeared. They then interviewed the passenger who claimed she'd seen a crack in the fuselage before takeoff. The area she pointed out was the exact same area investigators believed the original hole appeared before the high winds ripped off the rest of the roof. So, how had not one but 2 separate inspectors missed this crack? It turned out, to keep the cost of inspecting older Boeing aircraft down, the Federal Aviation Administration only made fuselage inspections mandatory along the 2 most critical joints. Inspections of the other joints fell to the discretion of each airline. Despite the aircraft having operated for 35,496 hours or 4 years in a salty and highly corrosive overseas environment, Aloha Airlines hadn't thought it necessary to inspect every last joint. It was this combination of maintenance complacency that ultimately led to Flight 243's terrifying ordeal. It was such a catastrophic failure of maintenance standards that U.S. regulators overhauled the inspection process of all older aircraft in their service. The Airworthiness Assurance Task Force was established, mandatory corrosion control programs were developed, and if a defect was found on one plane, an entire fleet reinspection could be ordered. It was a huge, expensive undertaking, but one that was too late for Claribel Lansing. Sadly, her body was never found. But it could have been worse were it not for the incredibly brave actions of the crew. They were rightfully hailed as heroes. However, they wouldn't be the last crew to live through something so scary because of bad maintenance practices. Before we delve into another incredible story that I'd argue is even more shocking, be sure to follow my podcast and leave a 5-star rating. All done. Then brace yourself because I promise you're not going to believe this next story. On June 10, 1990, a British Airways flight traveling from Birmingham to Malaga set off with 81 passengers and 6 crew on board a BAC-111 aircraft. Co-pilot Alistair Acheson and Captain Timothy Lancaster were experienced airmen who'd clocked up almost 2,200 hours of flight time on BA-111s and had no issues during takeoff. At 17,000 feet, they loosened their belts and informed the cabin crew they could prepare for meal service. Air steward Nigel Ogden entered the cockpit 27 minutes into the flight to ask what the pilots wanted for breakfast. But then, without any warning, the unimaginable happened. Two of the left-hand side cockpit windscreen panels suddenly blew out, and rapid decompression rocked the plane. Every loose object that wasn't strapped down was sent hurtling through the cockpit, including Captain Lancaster. His body was horrifyingly sucked out of the plane headfirst, but his feet were caught on the control column. The explosion had also ripped the cockpit door off its hinges and smashed it into the center console, blocking essential instruments. Because the captain's feet had dragged the control column forward, the plane's autopilot disconnected, and the aircraft dropped down into a nosedive. Without a second to lose, Air Steward Ogden leaped forward and grabbed the captain's waist just in time to stop him from being pulled all the way out. As the pressure equalized, the wind began roaring back in, causing a tornado of debris in the cockpit and pinning Captain Lancaster against the top of the fuselage. Ogden held on to the captain for dear life, but co-pilot Acheson couldn't reach the essential controls. As the plane dived down, he sent out a mayday call, but over the roaring wind, he couldn't tell if the controllers had heard him. The plane began to plummet through some of the busiest airspace in the country. Two more flight attendants fought their way into the cockpit, grabbing onto the captain and stamping on the door to unblock the essential systems. By this point, Ogden was suffering from a lack of oxygen, frostbite from the freezing 350 miles per hour winds, and felt like his arms were about to be ripped off. Unable to keep hold of the captain any longer, the two other air stewards grabbed hold of the captain's feet. As they did, the co-pilot regained control of the plane and pulled up to make a slower descent. Captain Lancaster's body began to slide down to the left of the plane, leaving his face plastered against the window. Inside the cockpit, everyone's heart sank. He didn't look like he'd made it. They briefly contemplated letting his body go, but Ogden shot the idea down immediately on principle. There was also a chance that he'd be sucked into one of the engines, potentially bringing the entire plane down. Then Acheson began the unenviable task of bringing down a two-pilot jet all by himself. His charts and checklists had also been blown out of the cockpit. It just couldn't get any worse. He managed to contact air traffic control, who directed him to Southampton Airport, an airport he was completely unfamiliar with. Relying on the controller alone, without his charts, checklists, or captain, he guided the aircraft down and somehow made a safe emergency landing. The 81 passengers, having seen their lives flash before their eyes, disembarked without a single reported injury. Though it wasn't such a happy story for Captain Lancaster. He'd been battered against the outside of the plane in temperatures as low as negative 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit for 20 minutes. There was no hope for his survival. And yet, as paramedics removed his body, he opened his eyes. He was alive. Despite his ordeal, he suffered little more than frostbite, a few bruises, and a couple of minor fractures. After a brief stint in the hospital, he returned to service just 5 months later. It was, in a word, miraculous. Now, I'm no aviation expert, but I'm pretty sure jet plane windscreens aren't meant to pop out like that. So, what happened?
The holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel very meaningful and personal. They focus on high-quality, unique items that are often handmade or created by independent artists, so everything feels extra thoughtful. I found this custom star map that shows the night sky from any date and immediately thought, yep, that's the one. It's beautifully designed, completely customizable, and perfect for my girlfriend who's obsessed with stargazing. Uncommon Goods truly has something for everyone, from parents and teens to foodies, sports fans, book lovers, and gardeners. Plus, they donate $1 to a nonprofit of your choice with every purchase, already giving back over $3.1 million. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/beamazed. That's uncommongoods.com/beamazed for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Well, an extensive investigation discovered that a few days before the fateful flight, the plane had undergone a routine service. On a list of things to fix up, it needed a new captain's side windscreen. The shift maintenance manager decided to do the job himself. It had been a few years since he'd last replaced one, and yet he didn't look up the procedure in the plane's manual. After removing all 90 bolts securing the windscreen, he noticed they were a little corroded, so decided to replace them as well. However, the replacements he used were too narrow, only by 0.02 of an inch, but enough to cause a problem, as he'd soon realize. Without checking the workover, the plane was returned to service for its next journey, Flight 5390. Once in the sky, the pressure pulled the narrow bolts right out of their holes, popping the replaced windscreens out and nearly costing the captain his life. It was an incident that stemmed from an aircraft maintenance culture of getting the job done on time, which relied on quick judgment calls and disregarded basic safety violations. As a result of the investigation's findings, sweeping changes were made to the way British Airways maintenance engineers worked. Shift managers were no longer allowed to self-certify their own work, engineers were to receive periodic retraining, and all were required to recertify their qualifications every few years. This would ensure any unsafe habits picked up were quickly dropped, and that all pilots would be safe knowing they'd be flying inside their plane instead of on top of it from now on. It's not just explosive or rapid decompression that can have pilots scrambling to make an emergency landing. On June 8, 2019, Delta Airlines Flight 1425 took off from Atlanta Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, heading for Baltimore with 148 passengers on board. The 1.5-hour trip took place daily on Delta's McDonnell Douglas MD-88 aircraft, usually without incident. But not today. Shortly after takeoff, a number of passengers heard a loud boom. At first, they thought it might be turbulence, but then they began to smell something odd. It was smoke. Not the kind you smell from a cigarette, but the strong, scary kind from burning metal. And it was slowly filling the cabin. Flight attendants worked quickly to keep all passengers calm and inform the captain. That's when the plane suddenly slowed down. It began to get hot and the air circulation cut off. It was then that passenger Logan Webb looked out their window and saw the engines on fire, with the engine's nose cone dangerously dancing around it. Somehow, mid-flight, it had detached from the central shaft of the plane's engine and was rattling around against the fan blades. The passengers were told to prepare for an emergency landing, and miraculously, the plane safely landed in Raleigh, North Carolina. No passengers or crew were injured, and they were all safely transferred onto another flight. The airline initially said that they made the emergency landing because of a possible issue with one of the engines. Possible issue? I'm no pilot, but I'm pretty certain that seeing a nose cone detached like that mid-flight is a definite issue. Even so, aviation expert John Cox claimed the plane wasn't in that much danger because all airliners are designed to be able to fly with one inoperative engine. Delta hasn't yet disclosed how this had been allowed to happen, but later revealed that they were planning to scrap all MD-88s from their fleet by 2020. I wonder why. Making a rough landing in a large passenger jet with hundreds of other people on board seems pretty scary, but on smaller planes, it's another level of fear. And anyone who was on board Flybe Flight 1284 on February 23rd, 2017, will probably agree. The flight, which had taken off from Edinburgh, Scotland, and was landing at Schiphol, Amsterdam, was a Dash 8 turboprop-powered plane. So, no jet engines with cones that fall off here. Though that wasn't the problem with this flight. After a delay of 90 minutes at takeoff due to bad weather, the plane and its 59 passengers and 6 crew finally had the landing strip in sight, but it turned out to be one heck of a bumpy ride. The second the plane touched down, its right side landing gear collapsed. Those passengers were so lucky the blade didn't snap off and fling through the fuselage when it hit the tarmac. Fortunately, none of the passengers or crew were injured, though the airport called out the emergency services just in case. It took the Dutch safety board over a year to get to the bottom of the collapse, and they eventually released an almost 50-page long investigative document. It turned out there was a faulty proximity sensor that hadn't been detected and a slight fault in the main landing gear yoke. This is the bit attached to the wheels, but the fault had been acquired back when the plane was first constructed. It just hadn't been picked up on until it was too late. Combined with the dud sensor and the rough conditions at Schiphol, when the aircraft touched down, the main landing gear strut was placed under too much torsion and collapsed. Fortunately, it only resulted in a landing that was a little lopsided. Though, if you ask me, any landing you can walk away from is a good landing. Having to make an emergency landing on land in a passenger jet is no easy feat. Although having your engine cut out while you're still in the air, over the water, in an old war relic is arguably way more terrifying. Back in April 2021, Florida's Cocoa Beach Air Show was in full swing. Hundreds of aircraft from all eras were taking off from the nearby Patrick Space Force Base, with thousands of onlookers perched on the beach. But when a World War II-era TBM Avenger started flying overhead, something didn't sound right. The single-engine plane suffered a sudden mechanical function in its lone engine, forcing it to splash land in the water. Miraculously, no one paddling in the water was hit, and landing luckily in the shallows meant the pilot was at no risk of drowning. They got out okay, but the plane wasn't so fortunate. It was removed from the beach and towed back to the base for, what experts estimate to be, years of repairs. Better the plane than the pilot, if you ask me. Now, it's not just mechanical failures that can force planes to make emergency landings. Back in July 2020, a group of guys was traveling around Pulyuk in the Mexican state of Quintana Roo when they heard something strange above them. A helicopter? Gunfire? What was going on up there? They kept the camera rolling just in case, which is a good thing because I don't think anyone would have believed what they saw next without the footage. As they turned onto the highway, they suddenly saw an insane scene. Up ahead of them in the middle of the highway was a private plane on fire. According to reports from the scene, the helicopter from before had been firing on the plane, which was suspected to carry narcotics. It was this that forced it to make an emergency landing. Once it landed on the highway, the plane's occupants set fire to the multi-million-dollar aircraft before getting into a nearby truck and fleeing. Mexico's Ministry of Defense later claimed that they found the truck abandoned, with more than 200 kilos of what they believed to be a certain illicit substance scattered in and around it. That's about $60 million worth of the stuff. Oh boy, these guys must have been in a real hurry to leave so much of it behind. But why would they set fire to the plane? Were they trying to make it look like they'd crash-landed? Maybe burn any evidence? Now, when you're driving down the highway, there are some things you really don't want to see, such as roadwork ahead signs, a slow hauler trying to overtake another equally slow hauler, or a plane landing and moving traffic. Wait. What was that last one? Back in April 2020, Mathieu Leclerc was traveling down the busy Highway 40 in Quebec, Canada, when he spotted a light aircraft traveling dangerously low above him. It was a little odd, but he definitely didn't expect what happened next. Without warning, the plane dropped down and landed in the middle of moving traffic. Had this pilot forgotten his glasses and confused the highway for the landing strip? Well, it turned out that the pilot of the small aircraft had just taken off from a nearby airport when he started having some engine trouble. He tried to make it back, but the problem quickly got worse. He got in touch with the air traffic controller, who suggested that he land on the highway below him. Emergency services were called out, and thankfully, no one was injured. Might have been a different story if he'd landed in the lanes going the other way. Well, if you didn't have a fear of flying before, I bet you do now. If you're not done with aviation facts, I've got more airplane episodes for you. Check it out. Thanks for listening.